Welcome back to Martin Loves Chaos, the place where we slow down enough to listen to complexity, make space for curiosity, and work with chaos as a creative force rather than something to eliminate. In the last episode, I shared a bit of my lineage, where I come from, the experiences that shaped me, and how I ended up doing this work I do today. Today, we're moving deeper into that. We're going to explore chaos as a creative spark, how it helps people step out of familiar patterns, how it makes space for new voices, and how it allows wisdom that's already in the room to finally show itself. This wisdom is especially for you if you work with teams, communities, or systems that feel stuck or overly comfortable, or like they keep getting the same results no matter how much effort people put in. Let's step in. One of the most important things to understand about humans, about organizations, communities, and systems is this. We are pattern finders and pattern repeaters. We love predictability. A leads to B, B leads to C. We know what comes next, and that gives us a sense of safety and control. Some of these patterns are personal, habits we've developed through experience. Others are cultural, passed down through families, professions, institutions, and entire industries. And over time, these patterns quietly turn into rules. This is how meetings work. This is who speaks. This is what counts as a good idea. This is the path people are supposed to take. The challenge is that patterns don't always update themselves, even when the world around them has changed. That's where chaos comes in. Not as destruction, but as interruption. Creative chaos gently disrupts the familiar loop just enough to ask, is this still the pattern we need? And that question becomes especially powerful when new voices enter the room. Here's something I've learned again and again. If everyone in the room shares the same background, the same training, and the same lived experience, the outputs will be similar. That's not a failure. That's just how systems work. Diversity of background, identity, role, experience, worldview introduces new inputs into the system, and new inputs are what allow the new pattern to form. But diversity alone isn't enough. If the system isn't willing or able to listen, if the space doesn't feel safe enough for people to trust their own knowing, then those new voices stay quiet or get dismissed or get absorbed back into the dominant pattern. That's why creating safe, intentional spaces is not optional, it's foundational. This is where Amy Edmondson's work on psychological safety aligns deeply with how I think about facilitation.
And this situational humility combined with curiosity creates a sense of psychological safety that allows you to take risks with strangers. Because let's face it, it's hard to speak up, right? It's hard to ask for help. It's hard to offer an idea that might be a stupid idea if you don't know people very well. You need psychological safety to do that.
Patterns are strong. Challenging them takes courage. And courage only shows up when people feel safe enough to trust themselves and the room. That's where my role begins. I have recently started to describe myself as a human systems architect. Yes, I am an architect licensed in New York and can and have designed buildings there. In this role, though, I don't design buildings. I design conditions. Conditions where people can see the systems they're part of and see themselves within it. And another metaphor I use, one that feels very true in my lived experience, is this. I act as a wisdom rod, like a lightning rod, but instead of drawing electricity, I draw out the wisdom already present in the room. When people walk into a space, whether they're deeply inside the system or standing on the edges of it, they carry wisdom. Sometimes it's big and articulated. Sometimes it's quiet and embodied. Sometimes it's just a gut feeling. Something's off. Or there's another way. My work isn't about injecting answers. It's about helping that wisdom jump out. Onto sticky notes, into small group conversations, up onto the wall, into new designs, programs, processes, and ways of working. For that to happen, people have to trust their own knowing, and the system has to be willing to receive it. That's where creative chaos becomes a bridge. But first, a method for creating the space or environment for creative chaos. Before we shake up ideas, we shake up how people show up. There are many ways people do this, such as icebreakers, relationship builders, warm-up activities, and group openers. A colleague of mine always enjoyed having a meeting playlist at their disposal and asked some version of, "What's one song that feels really present for you right now?" Or, "What is a song that is at the top of your playlist?" All the attendees will share their song, create a little playlist, and this does something subtle but powerful. It breaks the pattern of role-based participation. People stop showing up only as the executive, the expert, the skeptic, the outsider, the quiet one. They show up as humans with moods, histories, and inner worlds. And the best part is, you can share this playlist with a group after the meeting and play the songs during breaks. It gets people to open up, get excited, become curious, and get to know a different layer of the people in the room. There's always that surprising song that does not match any of the preconceived notions of who that person is. There's the quiet song, the pop songs. All of them make up the tapestry that is the room and start building the connections. They open up. This aligns closely with Brené Brown's work.
Now, and I know that vulnerability is kind of the core of shame and fear and our struggle for worthiness, but it appears that it's also the birthplace of joy, of creativity, of belonging, of love.
When people feel human in the space, they're more willing to step outside of familiar patterns, allow a little discomfort, lean into it, or become more curious. And that's when wisdom starts to surface. Once the room is warm, we move to a practice that externalizes thinking. The sticky note storm isn't just about ideas. It's about making inner wisdom visible. On a wall, have two or three prompts or questions that you are looking for responses from the people in the room to help build conversations on the topics, programs you are investigating. Provide time for them to write their ideas on post-it notes, one idea per note. Then put them up on the wall and add as many as they like. Some will have many, others will have a few. When the people write in silence, they bypass the usual conversational hierarchy. They don't have to compete for airtime. They don't have to be fully formed. Wisdom that might never make it into open discussion suddenly appears on the wall. This is especially powerful for people who are new to the system, historically marginalized, or simply wired to process internally. And from a systems perspective, this moment is critical. Then have people read through the notes up there. They can add more as it generates more ideas, questions, or requires clarification. During this time, you start to move the view back onto themselves and the system. This makes me think of Otto Scharmer and Theory U.
So the question is, how do you change consciousness? How do you change the mindsets of people who are enacting a system? Is that you can't transform these mindsets, you can't transform consciousness until you make a system see itself, right? That's the first part. That's like classical systems thinking. You need to look into the mirror. If you're not looking into the mirror, if you're not seeing yourself in this situation, you're not going to close the knowing-doing gap.
When wisdom moves from inside people's heads into shared spaces, the system can finally see itself and begin to evolve. Let me share a story from my work in architecture licensure. For years, there has been a deeply embedded cultural pattern in the field. You must work for an architect to become an architect. A to B to C. It was predictable, familiar, and safe. And yes, the profession was used to that. The public probably expects it, that you have experience doing architecture. But the world wasn't fitting the pattern anymore. People were gaining real competency in non-traditional roles Yet the old pathways excluded them, especially those from diverse backgrounds or career paths. When the system is questioned by those very familiar with it, and they see no problem with it, you need to create ways to connect with experiences different from theirs to spark curiosity, pause, and possibility. So we brought real scenarios to committees and volunteers, experiences different from theirs, yet real and filled with potential. At first, the pattern snapped right back. Nope, impossible, not allowed. Still, they need to work for an architect to become an architect. But when people slowed down, when they looked at the real stories and heard the lived experience, the pattern loosened. They started saying, maybe, if we evaluate it differently. That maybe is the moment creative chaos opens the door. And Adam Grant names this so clearly, and I'm paraphrasing him a little bit, that originals are the ones who question the defaults. They are the ones who do not use the pre-installed browser and instead download and install a different one, maybe better than the default. It is going beyond the pattern readily accessible and making space time to try something different. Now that we have post-it notes all over the wall, how do you go deeper, create more discussion, and get more ideas to pop out, or more clarity on ideas already in the room? This brings me to another potential method. The exciting slash scary poll is one of my favorite ways to locate the edge of the pattern. What you're going to do is have the people go back up, look at the wall, and start to add green dots or red dots. Green dots are those ideas that are really exciting, something they really want to go to, drawn to. And then the red dots go on the things that are scary items, things that they're just really afraid of or just don't want to do, or something that's giving them a pause. Give them only so many dots that they can put up, and they go up and add them to those ideas. Now, the interesting thing in that is, the exciting ideas show desire or something shiny that may be possible or exciting. They may be safe or could be a great potential as well. The next thing is to go deeper and ask the next question. Why did you pick this as exciting? Their answer might give you a little bit deeper information. If they go, because this looks easy to implement and will not take many resources and works with our current processes, that might give you some pause. The scary ideas reveal where the system feels threatened, stretched, or not possible with the current information and resources. Often those scary ideas come from new perspectives, from people not fully embedded in the dominant pattern. Does not mean a scary item is not valuable. This is a way to open up the conversation more and see why a potential idea from one person may be a scary idea to consider from another. In that dialogue, you can create understanding of the concerns of the potential and to start to add more layers than just the immediate dismissal of an idea in the first place. In that dialogue, you can sometimes create understanding of the concerns of the potential and start to add more layers than just the immediate dismissal of the idea in the first place. And that's precisely where transformation begins. Remember, patterns give us comfort. Chaos gives us possibilities. Diversity gives us the raw material for new patterns to form. At the end of the day, my work as a human systems architect is about movement, helping wisdom move from individuals into the collective, from the intuition into expression, from chaos into clarity. As you head into your next meeting or gathering, try one experiment. Notice what wisdom wants to surface. Notice what patterns loosen. Notice what becomes possible when the system listens. If your organization is navigating complexity and wants help designing spaces where wisdom can emerge, visit martinloveschaos.org to learn more. Our next episode is going to be our first conversation episode, and I'm going to be joined by Chris Schubert, from HumanSync. They do a lot of great work with people and organizations to help them have better processes to move work forward and help people feel belonging in that space. If you are interested in joining me in these conversations and sharing your perspectives and the ways that you work with chaos, please reach out to me and please share this podcast with those who are interested in exploring chaos and getting value out of this. Please post comments on my Facebook page, my LinkedIn account. I'm really interested in hearing from you all because this will help me better understand how I can be doing this better. What can I do differently? This is the last episode where it's going to be just me talking and you get to hear other voices and perspectives. I really look forward to sharing that with you all. And I do look forward to hearing from you. The more you share with me, the better these sessions can be. So thank you for stepping into the unknown with me. I am Martin from Martin Loves Chaos.
Welcome to The Swirl.